This is an ABC podcast.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
You're on The Conversation Hour. Good morning. My name's Rochelle Hunt, your co-host this morning. Nick Healy joining you from ABC Shepparton. Nick, today we're throwing our spotlight back onto hospitality, because many from the industry and the profession have been asking for some time now, is hospo broken and has it recovered? Has it ever recovered from some of the awful things that they went through during COVID?
It is hard to imagine what it would have been like trying to run, especially one of the smaller venues, a small cafe, small pub, bar, whatever have you, during those lockdown periods. You know, I was in New South Wales for the lockdowns. I didn't go through anything like what Victoria went through. And even then, you know, I saw great restaurants, great bars, great cafes that I went to regularly, either on by a thread or closing soon after lockdown came out. It was a tragic time. And the question has been, who could bounce back after that, I think?
That's right. I mean, a lot of businesses only survived because they had family that could work for free, sons, daughters, aunties, uncles, friends, you name it, anyone that was willing to work. And it was really tough, and we saw a lot of businesses shut up. But today's conversation is putting that spotlight back on. Did they recover? And if so, who recovered, right? Is there a little bit of a city regional divide? Are some businesses still struggling to find staff? If you did have financial issues throughout COVID, how do you then continue to run that business? Because we've only seen interest rates go up, Nick. You know, we haven't seen the pressure come off in any way. We've seen electricity prices go up. We've seen gas prices go up. We've seen supply chain issues when it comes to food. And we know that food prices have gone through the roof as well. Now, just because you work and run a venue in hospitality doesn't mean that you get cheaper chicken. The price is the price.
And of course, the flip side of that is, you know, if your chicken, great example, everyone loves chicken. If your chicken's gone up 300%, well, you're not going to charge people three times as much to make that money back. Your already slim margins are being eaten away incredibly hard. And when we talk about hospo, it doesn't exist in a vacuum, especially for regional areas. If you're coming into a town as a tourist and there is nowhere to grab a drink or a bite or, you know, even just sit and have a cup of coffee, that impacts everyone around. I mean, these are major tentpole industries for so many communities.
Absolutely. The ripple effects can be huge. If you're late with one particular bill, then that ripples on to the next business, to the next business, and to the next business. So if you work in hospitality, especially if you're in a regional area, how are you faring at the moment? Many are saying we need assistance. We need some government assistance. It might be in the form of something like a job seeker or interest-free loans. What do you think? Do you think that government should be propping hospitality businesses up at the moment?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Good morning, Rochelle Hunty with you in Melbourne. Nick Healy joining you from ABC Shepparton. And you couldn't have a conversation around whether or not hospitality is broken without our next guest, Danny Valent, the creator and the host of the Dirty Linen podcast, food writer and just general food lover and industry advocate. Danny, on your podcast, you've been running a series for a long time now asking the question, is hospitality broken? Is it?
Yeah, it is a big question. And that's, I suppose, why we keep answering it and we get a diversity of answers. I think overall, no, because people won't let it break. I think so many people that work in hospitality, they are there for life. That is what they do. That is who they are. So they need to find a way to make it work. But what I'm hearing again and again is that it's never been this hard. You know, as you say, like chicken might go up 300%. That is something that businesses can't absorb. They can't charge their customers three times the price, but perhaps they will use a chicken that's of lesser quality. So, you know, we've got those kinds of issues, like how do people reshape their businesses, to thinking about people going to regional towns. As you say, you know, they need to be able to get a coffee and a bite to eat. Perhaps there is somewhere to get it, but it's understaffed, so it takes longer, so people have a worse experience.
And we don't have the patience, remember? We were asked to be patient during COVID.
Oh, yeah.
And some of us were, and some of us were hideous. You know, you heard stories about people being spat on and yelled at and all sorts of things. I feel like I don't know whether we've got that patience anymore.
Well, I think the thing about hospitality is that people want to go to a restaurant, to a cafe to escape from the rest of their lives. It's for that time out, whether it's time that you give yourself or time that you want to spend with friends and family. And I think, you know, it's always, hospitality has always been about creating that magic, creating that that seamless experience. Yes, the duck is paddling madly underwater, but we just want our perfect coffee. We want our lovely salad. We don't want to necessarily think about the problems that have gone, you know, or the stresses that come to bear on bringing that to the table. So I think in a way hospitality is a unique industry in that regard, where it, you know, you do hide the workings of the machine. What I'm hearing is that it's so hard for people that they want to air some of these issues. They want to bring things to the surface. And yeah, as we were perhaps in COVID, you know, that we're all standing on the same side trying to work this out.
Well, Danny, that's something, you know, I don't want to get too in the weeds in this, but the individuals, especially people who are owner-operators, yeah. I mean, the pressure that they are under, as you say, it isn't broken because people won't let it break, but what cost is it putting on them, not just financially, but emotionally, physically, the full works?
Well, look, I think people are still, I think a lot of hospitality operators have not recovered emotionally from COVID. They haven't given themselves the time or they don't have the resources to really let that all to the surface. So I think there's definitely, yeah, there's a lot of, I don't know, I can't diagnose PTSD, but I feel like that's a kind of, you know, a term that's thrown around where people just haven't got back on their feet emotionally. And these people are leaders, you know, so they're leading staff. They're trying to create an atmosphere in their restaurant for their teams. It is really tricky times.
And don't forget, we saw a lot of people leave the industry at the time when places shut and were forced to shut that actually never returned as well. So there's a lot of retraining that's happening at the moment. Andy Mullins has given us a call. Andy, you're well and truly known to this industry. I believe you're the former owner of the Espy down on the Esplanade in St Kilda. What's prompted you to give us a buzz today?
We never call ourselves owners of the Espy. We were custodians for a really important period of time.
But, aren't we all? No, we're all custodians of that joint, I think.
Everybody owns a bit of it. It's just a really interesting point that you were discussing. It's a great conversation, and I think people take a lot of heart to know that you're still talking about the industry. There's just two things that struck me. One is how does government immediately give relief? It's letting go of the... It's such a highly regulated industry with so many licenses and payroll tax and this tax and that tax and excises. And it's just a really challenging business, especially the smaller side of it. Just ease up for 2 or 3 years. Like just don't be sending the ATO notices, you know, the day that the government's missing out some money. This cafe or business or wine bar or hotel, they really have been, we have been literally on our knees. We're always the first to close, always the last to open. So I think while operators like us were watching Smiggle and these other companies, you know, raking in millions through JobKeeper, JobKeeper didn't really help hospitality in that sense. So I just sort of make that point. As in, it helped the workers in hospitality, and thank God it did, because it kept people alive. But it didn't really help the businesses, because in the end, the businesses were shut and they were always last to open with these draconian... I mean, there were people, inspectors coming into dance floors, keeping people apart. You had to dance on the disc. I mean, it's...
Oh, they forgot about the dancing ban. Footloose was real for a moment in our lives.
We had to block a lot of this stuff out, honestly.
We really did.
The paint marks at the Botanic Gardens, like on the grass. You couldn't have your picnic too close.
But the other one I was going to... It might be even more important is, and you said it before, hospitality doesn't live in a vacuum. It's the downstream suppliers. So the fruit and veg, it's the young distilleries, it's the winemakers. And most of hospitality in Victoria isn't big corporate. It actually does align with, say, the Mornington Peninsula or the Yarra Valley or the Riverina areas up in around Echuca. And that's where a lot of these relationships are formed. And so when those producers aren't, they've got to dump their product too, because they used to buy lamb or broccoli or wine through them. That is a much bigger problem, and they got no attraction at all, no spotlight on them. So that's where I'd say, I reckon we're a 10 to 20 build-out.
Yeah. But Andy, I'll let you go in a second, but really quickly, mate, what would you say to someone who is thinking, I want to get into hospo now? I mean, would you say that you have your brain checked? Don't do it?
I don't think you can ever tell. Hospitality is a passion industry. It's a little more like, I mean, look how underfunded the hospitals are. Do the nurses want to quit? No, they don't. It's what they do. And I'd say to any young person, go for it. But just put some really, like, come and talk to anyone. We're so easy to get to, and I'd like to help them with, you know, it's pretty crippling seeing landlords taking full whack of their rent while their tenants are closed. That was wrong. That was criminal. That was not right. So what I'd say is make sure you're in the right partnerships. Make sure you've got a good safety net around you. Make sure you don't sign up for really long-term leases and aggressive increases. But would I recommend it? I've got three kids. I would love them to be in hospitality.
Andy, and I reckon you've touched on something. And look, this was almost a little bit of yesterday's, or actually Monday's conversation around the future of family farms and whether or not we expect people to work for that love. Like, you can hear the passion in Andy, right? He's called through. He's still got a lot to say on this, and rightly so. But I guess two things, Danny Valente. Can we expect people to do it just on passion and love? But can we also expect the government? Why should we be expecting the government to come in and to prop up and to make changes for one industry and not all industries? Where do you draw that line?
Well, on the first point, I mean, I think so many people go into hospitality and any creative industry because of passion, but you can't live on passion. You know, you can't pay your bills on passion. You can't buy produce on passion. So I think that there always has to be some rigour around these businesses, even when they are small, and perhaps, you know, especially when they are small and then they can grow slowly. Should the government prop up businesses? I know that governments have, you know, put a lot of money in and they're desperately trying to recoup. So I know that those, you know, I'd say a lot of hospitality business do owe the ATO, but, you know, there's no leniency. So I don't know. I feel like it's a bigger question. It's like, who do we want to be as Australians? Do we want to be a country that takes pride in its small family-run businesses that express culture, express community, that support the people around them? I would say yes, I want to be part of that society. Therefore, I support anything that is going to help that happen.
So if you work in hospitality, how's it going at the moment? What's your experience like? And do you feel like you need help?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Good morning, Rochelle Hunt here with you in Melbourne. Nick Healy joining you from ABC Shepparton, and in the studio with us as well, creator and host of the Dirty Linen podcast, Danny Valente. As we throw a spotlight back onto hospitality, how is it faring at the moment, in particular for regional Victoria? There are calls for more government assistance, for maybe ways to look at helping businesses stay afloat, at least in the short term. Jodie Gillett is the CEO of the Commerce of Ballarat and has been helping facilitate the Victorian Regional Chamber Alliance Group. Jodie, a warm welcome to the Conversation Hour. What role do you want, I guess, state government, I'm presuming it is at the moment, to play in the world of hospitality and keeping businesses going at the moment?
Well, I think it's important to sort of note right at the start that most businesses are doing it pretty tough at the moment, but our hospo friends have been doing it tough continually since 2019. So they've had, you know, they're carrying massive debt, they're exhausted, and they just are finding, you know, how long do we expect them to just keep going? And what we would be asking for is, what we've seen is these businesses that have been hit the hardest, who are stressed, who are exhausted, and now every time they open an envelope or an email, the cost has increased. And that, you know, government can assist with that. You know, our liquor licences have gone from $1,000 in 22 to $3,400 in 23. You know, these sorts of increases are just putting more and more pressure back onto these people who are, you know, really doing it tough.
And Jodie, within Ballarat, is that across the board? I mean, is there anywhere in that hospo industry that's doing okay, or is it really right across everything?
I can speak from Ballarat to start with. I also speak broader because obviously I'm talking to chambers right around across the state. I think probably middle of last year, we actually saw that the higher end restaurants, the higher end bars were not feeling it so much. So maybe their customers still had, you know, had money to spend, discretionary money. This year, now, it's right across the board. It doesn't matter who you are. And what level of hospitality you're in, you're doing it incredibly, incredibly tough.
So what would, if there was a lever to be pulled, what would actually help and work, Jodie? Because at the same time, is it the government's responsibility to prop up every business? If fundamentally your business is not making money and maybe it's not on a good business model, when Andy Mullins called before, he was sort of pretty much saying, you know, do your due diligence, figure out what your business model is, make sure that, you know, that you've got on a fixed rental agreement or whatever it is. So surely it's not the government's role to fix every business that maybe isn't running so well.
Well, absolutely not. But we do have certain sectors who were hit worse than others during COVID. So they came out of COVID with debts. They then went into 12 months where they couldn't find staff. So business owners were working, you know, 60, 70 hours. Now they can find staff, but they can't afford. So now they're still working 60 or 70 hours. Their produce has gone up. Consumer spend is right down because our community is doing it tough as well. And I think, you know, government can help. They can stop, you know, I mean, work cover has increased, you know, up to 60%. So said liquor licences. There are so many additional costs. I think one in particular for hospitality in the last few months was the requiring someone to have a food safety certificate on every shift. So for some pubs that meant they had to put, you know, 10 or 12 people through that course, which was $300-$400 a course. They had to pay them the hours. We're talking thousands of dollars that cost in order to have somebody. So that there are, every time they turn around, there's a new piece of compliance and a new cost or an increase in their costs. Power, October 23, $6,000. Now, February, $8,500.
Yeah, there's lots of people talking about power.
Jodie, it's we can all see in daily life how these costs are going up. I think one thing that I'm also hearing from businesses is it's not only about the cost, it's about the efficiency. So you mentioned liquor licences. People are not only paying more for liquor licences, they're waiting a long time to have them approved. That means they can't get their businesses open to full capacity and start selling the alcohol that'll help them stay afloat. So I think it's not only about the actual dollar amount, it's about the way these systems are administered. On the food safety, I would say I'm actually not too disappointed to have someone with a food safety qualification working every shift.
Because so the industry did need more checks and balances, right?
I think some of these, some of the regulatory things, although they are a burden, I think, you know, businesses do have to carry these regulatory burdens. We need to be safe in these restaurants.
Yeah, but should they be paying for that would be my take on it. Like, if it is that regulation, I agree. I'd love to have someone who's got food safety prep there. But should that be something that is then taken on as an expense to a business, or if it's a government regulation, should it be something government's putting their hand in for?
Ooh, Jodie, what do you reckon?
Interesting.
that's the way we're looking at it, because they are bringing it into businesses that are already under immense pressure, that, you know, that there is the availability for government to actually cover the costs. The employer would probably be, you know, I'll pay the staff member, but you give me a course that's free of charge. You deliver that course free to people in this area. I think that it's a really big conversation, but what we're seeing also is our most experienced, our most passionate hospitality people leaving the industry, selling their businesses and walking away. And what I'm seeing in Ballarat is the people that are buying them have never been in hospitality before. They maybe wandered past on a Friday night and thought, wow, look how busy they are. They're making lots of money. I'll buy that pub. And then they get in there and realise the margins are so small. It's such a specialised area.
You never, ever sleep ever again.
That's it. And so that's a real concern. In our city, we've had an incredible hospitality scene. We are seeing one after the other change hands, and all our experts are walking away. We hope they come back, but you know,
there's a text here from Tom that says hospitality ran itself into the ground off the backs of its workers prior to lockdown. Workers can't live on broken and scattered shifts, nor can the industry survive by paying its workers less in order to make a profit. So many of us just left. That's from Tom. I wonder, just finally, Jody, to be glass half full, is a changing of the guard necessarily a bad thing? I mean, if new businesses are coming through, is that not okay?
Oh, we love new businesses. Absolutely. We love new people. But it's concerning, and we're already seeing the effects of this with people coming in. You know, it's a very specialised skill and industry. And if you're coming in and you've been an accountant in the past but you've never been in hospitality before, it's a tough ask. And the opportunity to learn on the run is not so much there at the moment because it's such an incredibly difficult market.
Jody, thank you so much for that. Jody Gillette is the CEO of Commerce Ballarat, facilitates the Victorian Regional Chamber Alliance. She mentioned before, of course, Ballarat's incredible hospo scene. I'll throw my hand in the ring and say I was a part of it back in the 90s. My aunt and uncle had Craig's Royal Hotel in Ballarat, and I'd a troop out of uni come all the way down from New South Wales to do a bit of glassy work. It was an absolutely beautiful scene, to be perfectly honest. Sylvia's on the line. Sylvia, good morning to you.
Oh, good morning.
What did you want to say this morning while we can still hear you?
Right. Well, I really want to say that the hospitality industry is the most resilient industry. And I can go back to 1992 when we had the recession and three quarters of all Melbourne restaurants closed, shut their doors. But then we got together through, I think, the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival as the catalyst, and the hospitality got up and got running again. But today, there are three major things that the government needs to talk about. It's penalty rates, $60 an hour to work on a public holiday. It's rentals where you cannot get staff in the country. You've got the owners who want to run and want to put their money in and invest, but you can't put them in a house or a flat or whatever. Mm. There's no room for families to come and work in regional Victoria because there's just no houses. And the third, I think, is the horrific rate costs and the electricity costs.
Yeah, there's quite a few people, Sylvia. We're going to let you go because it's not a great line, but there were three really good points. Mm. Danny Valente, we know that paying people properly is your life's passion. We saw you advocate for the visa holders who were here during COVID. That can't be our argument, right? That, well, it's too expensive to pay people properly. I mean, something is not working in the whole system if that's the case.
Yeah, look, I think we all know that it's expensive to live in Australia. So if, I don't think that paying people less is the answer. I think it, what has happened is that people who are less skilled are being paid what people who are highly skilled were paid in the past. So I think there's a bit of a flattening. There isn't that incentive for people to slowly build up their skills, work their way up the kitchen hierarchy and slowly be paid more so that they can run a kitchen. I think, there's a sort of flattening where everybody is pretty well paid, which is great for their life, but I don't think it reflects the different skills that are required in the industry.
A lot of it comes back to us as consumers, right? What we're willing to pay, what we're willing to settle for, and I say that with love, in a cafe. There's a text here from Annie and it says, I'm sorry to say, but people just expect way too much from cafes in particular. They want fast service. They're impatient. They're rude. They expect to pay next to nothing for everything. My husband runs a cafe. I could write a book on this.
Yeah. I think that goes back to that. We just want that hospitality magic. I think there is, what are we prepared to pay? But what also can we pay? I think restaurateurs know that people are doing it tough. You know, their mortgage has gone up 25%, whatever it is. There's a reality there. They're not going to get the second bottle of wine. They're going to go out every second Friday night instead of every Friday night. And people still want to give them a great experience when they do walk through the door. So there's a squeeze. I think it's just being squeezed from every angle. That's what makes it so hard.
And that is the really tough one. I mean, you know, it is hard to justify for many households going out at the moment.
Of course it is.
And I think that puts a lot of pressure on what the experience is when you do go out.
Exactly.
I'll put my hand up and say, I can't stand brunch because I feel like it takes too long and really annoys me. So I don't go to brunch. Like, it's as simple as that. I don't go to brunch. I really have a problem with it.
Can we do a show on why brunch sucks?
you and I can just sit here and agree with each other for an hour, trust me.
Well, I'll tell you why it's still great, but okay.
Paul's called in from Frankston, and Paul, you've got a food truck.
Yeah, we've got a couple of food trucks. Hi, Danny. I think you and I have spoken.
We
actually spoke during COVID. I don't know if you remember.
I certainly do.
It's interesting. I'm listening to the conversation. And there's so many good points being brought up, but I think the squeeze one is the big one for us. We've been in business for 8 years now, and we're probably seeing it. It's as tough as it's ever been. And you know, Danny, I've been in the industry for a long time because it's coming at you from every side, and the normal option would be to increase your pricing. If you were a plumber and your costs went up, you'd just charge an extra $20 an hour or whatever you needed to charge to make the maths work. In hospitality, there's an almost an expectation to bring your prices down because people, at our end of the market, they're doing it tough. I think the bigger operators, and we all know who they are out there, are doing great, which is fabulous. You know, the big restaurants and the well-known restaurants in Melbourne are trading particularly well. And I think the divide between, I don't want to sound left of centre, but the divide between rich and poor is reflected nowhere better than in the hospitality industry. I think those that offer
And that divide is just becoming so stark.
It's quite. We've just come out of a significant trading period at the Queen Victoria Market, and seen a significant downturn in sales there. And historically, it's been very strong, and that is what I call the value end of the market. So they just don't have any. We dropped our prices at Queen Vic Market this year, so that explains a piece of our downturn. We had to because people just are expecting so much more at that bottom end. Than they were pre-COVID or even slightly after COVID.
Paul, I've got to say, in a dream world, I'd be eating at food trucks five times a week if I was allowed to. I'd just wander around. They'd be absolutely everywhere. They're not, and I've heard a few operators say that regulation makes that really hard. Have you found that difficult? Has that been a barrier?
I didn't even want to go down that track, but the barriers to entry now are unreasonable and significant, and I think people... The perception is that a food truck should be good value, but what they don't realise is that the compliance issues are probably more significant in our industry. Not more significant, but they're a bigger part of the puzzle because you are moving from council to council, so you don't develop those relationships. But the very fact that you're moving from council to council means that you're having to pay for fuel, it's funny, I've just sat down with a friend of mine who's in business looking at our P&Ls, we just have a chat every now and then about what's going on. And my Uber bills have gone through the roof because the expectation from my staff now is if you want me to work in Dandenong, you've got to get me there.
Okay.
And we do. We throw them in Ubers and we move them around. But these are all costs that were just unheard of 5 years ago.
I just find that fascinating to get some of those insights. Danny, I mean, the question earlier that Nick asked to Andy, who came in, who was a former custodian of the Esplanade, why would you go into it? Like, I mean, I knew it was bad during COVID, but it feels like it's got tougher.
I think any of these people that are calling in to say how hard it is would also say how satisfying it is. And just, you know, that there are all these things that you can't put on a balance sheet that make it worthwhile, you know, hopefully for long term. There is nothing like coming up with a dish, cooking it, giving it to someone, seeing them love it. I think that people get so much out of that and they're not going to let it go easily.
Before we go back to Ballarat and speak to a publican there, you've just been lucky enough to come back from overseas. How, I mean, this was a global pandemic, right? And you were in Barcelona and in France, some of the best places in the world to eat some of the most delicious food. How is hospitality faring there? Are they going through the similar issues?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think, you know, It's a big picture. So as much as I had a very, you know, idyllic and lucky experience in Spain and in France, there have been farmer strikes in both of those countries. So it's like these are supply chain issues. So the produce in the markets was really cheap and really beautiful. But if the farmers aren't being paid properly, then, you know, how is this all going to shake down? And it shakes down at every step of the supply chain to our dinner plates, you know, in restaurants and at home. I spoke to a chef who's worked in Melbourne for a long time and is now running a cooking school in Barcelona. He will not open a restaurant. He said, no, this is the jungle. So that was an interesting perspective. He talked about the, you know, the pay rates in Australia, that, you know, people could work in hospitality and make a decent living here, where he felt that was harder in Spain. One thing that I found really striking in France was this concept of the menu du jour, where you go somewhere for lunch or dinner, you get what you're given.
You get what you get.
You don't have a choice. It's like, this is the entree, this is the main, this is the dessert. And I spoke to a guy who runs a French cafe here just yesterday, and I said, well, you know, isn't that an amazing model? He's like, absolutely, but think about the dietaries here. We've got apparently no one in France needs to worry about, I don't know, FODMAP, vegeto, vegan, gluten. I don't eat this, I don't eat that.
Free baguette.
I mean, I think we're dealing with a very diverse society in Australia, which we all celebrate and love. But I think it means that people expect a lot of choice.
But Danny, just to say, is that a shake-up that could help this industry significantly? No more laminated menus that are 10 pages long. You know, they're literally a page of here are the meals we are doing, the
and
short meals.
And if we run out,
We trim margins down. Even family-style serving, like sit down at this table, we serve at 7 and 9 kind of thing.
We are seeing a lot more of we're seeing a lot smaller menus definitely in Australian restaurants. I think that's really good. It reduces wastage, it reduces you know, the groaning fridge with produce that is just costing you just by sitting there. So I think we're definitely seeing that, and that's something to celebrate. I think we eat more seasonal produce is cheaper, and perhaps slowly train the dining public that you can have your burrito there over there and you can have your stir fry over here, but perhaps you can't have everything on the same menu all the time. So I think that would be a welcome development.
And someone who started a lot of today's conversation is the general manager of Hotel Canberra in Ballarat. Pete Dillon, a warm welcome to the Conversation Hour. We heard from the Regional Chamber of Commerce before saying that in particular in Ballarat, she's seeing a lot of businesses shut down at the moment. What are you witnessing?
Oh, exactly the same. The industry is in probably a more challenging position than it's ever been in. I'm old enough to remember the days when they said the fringe benefits tax would kill the restaurant industry. It didn't. That the GST would kill the restaurant industry. It didn't. But I am now witnessing an industry that is just, we're in peril. And if we don't see action soon, and we need support to have that action soon, that industry is going to change fundamentally. It was interesting listening to that last piece that Danny was talking about with you, Rochelle, about menus offering a very simple menu. We do in our restaurant, because we have a restaurant, a cafe and a bar, our restaurant, we do a 6 or 8 course degustation. That's your choice. To a theme. We take in celiac, you know, gluten-free, all the dietaries that you can think of we've done. And we do a version of our menu dishes to cater for those dietaries. But we made that choice to do a 6 or 8 course. We use 100% Victorian produce. So that produce is, it has less space to travel or less distance to travel. So our real commitment is to having 100% Victorian in both our restaurant and our bar. And that means that we're getting our produce fresher and less of it, and we don't have a groaning cold room full of stock, because we know by 4 o'clock how many people are going to sit in our dining room and what they're going to eat.
And so, Pete, has that been effective for you? Has that helped keep those margins tighter?
No. The margins aren't tight, because whilst we're doing that, we're paying rent, we're paying insurance, we're paying tax, we're paying superannuation, we're paying higher prices for utilities than we ever have before. Those hard costs don't change. And so what does change is the amount of people that sit in our cafe, that sit in our dining room, that come and drink at our bar.
So what do you, I mean, that I guess is across the board, no matter what profession and industry you work in. Some would say, well, like this text, it says hospitality is not an essential need. that's why when cost of living goes up and going out for dinner, drinks and breakfast is one of the first things that people stop doing. To say that a plumber can pass on the cost to the clients but a cafe or a pub can't isn't true. The price of power affects absolutely everyone and every business. Pete, what can the government do to help, do you think? And why should they help hospitality as opposed to other industries and professions?
Well, I guess there's three things. Firstly, what we would call on the government to do is to bring back a version of JobKeeper or JobSeeker. As one of your previous callers said, wages are incredibly high. That doesn't change. We do have to pay $60 an hour on a public holiday. And if we don't have the people walk through our door to justify that, or we don't have the people to walk through our door for our staff to look after, then we're paying them $60 an hour to not be busy. So JobSeeker or JobKeeper, which helped the industry survive through the COVID pandemic, we need people to come and eat in our cafes and eat in our restaurants and drink in our bars and sleep in our hotel beds. We need people to get out of the major cities and head to regional Victoria and support us. But we also need access to things like zero cost or low cost loans or grants where we can apply for those, get ourselves through this quagmire that is what is currently happening. Because if we don't, we're going to end up with a hospitality industry that is driven by large players, that is driven by venues with gaming machines because they will survive, and that is driven by ultimately chains, groups of hotels where you could be in Ballarat, Bendigo or I don't know where else.
It's
the same. I was going for an alliterative answer there. But
yeah, only the large chain, corporates.
You're going to get the same dish in Ballarat that you're going to get in Bairnsdale. And that doesn't add to the industry. It takes away. It reduces. It makes it less of an exciting experience for customers. And it's interesting. If we don't have a hospitality industry, we don't have farmers, growers, winemakers, producers, small business entrepreneurs. I spoke to one of our suppliers yesterday. They're a small supplier. They're a husband and wife business. They are owed currently by businesses like ours $100,000.
Wow. There's one actually here unpaid from Henry, and it says, my family supplies fresh veggies into Ballarat restaurants and takeaway. I've done so for over 170 years. It's never been so hard. The cost of running is out of control. Cost of running the farm is up around 300%.
And if we don't have those producers, if we don't have those farmers and growers and winemakers and those people, then those towns and villages where those people operate and grow and make, they don't exist. Because if we can't pay our suppliers can't be where they are. Our suppliers can't send their kids to the local school. Our suppliers can't do what they do. And when they can't do what they do, regional Victoria dies.
Good to hear from you, Pete. Thanks so much for starting today's conversation. Pete Dillon there is the General Manager of Hotel Canberra in Ballarat. Danny Valente is with you in the studio as well, host of the Dirty Linen podcast, food writer. Danny, the onflow impacts, and this is something, you know, the topic is hospitality broken, is something that you've been discussing with industry and professionals for a long time now. How far down the chain does it go? And it, like, those businesses possibly just get smaller and smaller.
Yeah, I mean, look, it goes from, you know, the seed that's planted in the ground, it rides along on the truck to the cities, to the restaurants, and it ends up on the plates that we sit in front of and hopefully enjoy and then pay for. I mean, the buck does stop with consumers that it has to flow back all the way back to the farm. As Pete points out, you know, it's a complex ecosystem. It involves, you know, the vitality of regional towns, of suburbs, of local shopping strips. I agree with Pete that we don't want to see a homogenous hospitality industry. We want to see diversity in it. But I think what we are finding with some of the restaurant groups is that they are able to consolidate some of their costs. And they're not evil. You know, they're running businesses and they're feeding people and they're employing people. And, you know, I would also say that they're doing it tough as well in some cases. You know, even at the top end, people are spending less on wine, let's say, or they're bringing fewer clients to have business lunches. So it's felt across the board. But I don't know. I don't know if people are in a position to pay what it costs to have the industry we want.
Annie's called in. Annie, good morning to you.
Oh, good morning. I've just got, from a consumer point of view, I've often thought that
Penalty rates are terrific for people who have to work on those days but don't want to. That would certainly encourage them. But I think it should be a lot more flexible for hospitality, because they can. I get upset when I can't go to my favourite cafe because they're closed on a public holiday because they can't afford to open. Whereas I know there would be waiters and waitresses who would be happy to work for time and a half on that day, not necessarily $60 an hour or triple or double the normal rate. I don't understand why we can't be a bit more flexible with that sort of thing.
Annie, that's really interesting. Danny, what would be your take on that?
Yeah, look, I think there are some enterprise bargaining agreement style arrangements that some hospitality operators have. I think, you know, the regulations are there to protect the people who are vulnerable, to protect them from being, paid too little. I know that I've got kids who both work in food service and they love the penalty rates. They look forward to those public holidays where they can get double time, and that allows them, you know, to save up for things that they want. So I can see it from all sides, but I do know that you know, a lot of hospitality businesses operate at hours where penalty rates are incurred, you know, whether it's after 8 p.m, after 10 p.m, Saturdays, Sundays, holidays, and you know, as the caller points out, you know, that's times we want to eat out.
That's right.
In those periods, and even businesses that will put up a 10% or a 15% surcharge, that is not enough to cover those extra wage costs in most cases.
Danny, not to open a wild can of worms right before the hour ends, but does that go to our devaluing of a lot of hospo work? I mean, I've got a dear old friend who works as a bartender in New York, and that is a really well-respected job that she makes a living wage on because of the work she does, that no one would say to her, what else are you doing, or yeah, are you studying? You know, you even said sort of, you know, is it because we think of hospo jobs, especially front-of-house wait staff jobs, as something kids or students are going to do, not something someone might want to do as a job?
Yeah, I think there is definitely a cultural force at play here. I don't think, you know, careers counsellors will often talk to kids about, you know, the opportunities in hospitality. And there are wonderful opportunities to build, you know, a great career and a great life in hospitality. Of course, we're hearing how tough it is, but I mean, we could have another hour talking about how satisfying it is and, you know, all the golden moments. So, look, I think culturally we should value every worker, and that definitely includes hospo.
Leon Kennedy is a part of the Mulberry Group, which is a restaurant group. We've been talking about those sort of large corporations that own multiple restaurants. Well, the Mulberry is one of them. They own Hazel, Dessous, Liminal, Lilac Wine, Heidi Kitchen, and they've also got Square One Coffee Roasters. And you might have also heard of their farm and social enterprise agricultural group, Common Ground Project, just to name a few, Leon. Leon, the idea that only big groups like yourselves will survive, do you feel that that's true?
No, I definitely don't feel that that's true. I was fortunate enough to kind of share my thoughts on this with Danny a couple of weeks ago on her podcast. And for me, I'd kind of tend to take a very solid business lens when I kind of look at these things. And I just don't think there's really any industry out there, you know, that is in a situation where it's only the big corporations that can survive. And it's either, you know, the extremities where the big corporations or the tiny little sort of operators that can make it work. Like, business is just never that simple. You know, there's always a lot of diversity, complexity and color in it. And I think there's probably a different way of categorizing it. You know, I think it comes down to operators and businesses that have a certain level of strategy and the ones that don't. And I think that's probably a bit more representative of who will find success and who won't.
Well, Leon, we've been hearing from a lot of people saying they are struggling. We've been hearing from a lot of smaller groups saying that they are possibly looking at closing up shop. Is that something that's happening to you?
No, it's not. We sort of have found ourselves in a reasonably and relatively healthy position. But I would once again point to the depth of work that we've done on things like strategy and, you know, analysis of our business and diagnosing the environment and then, you know, coming up with coherent strategies that can meet that. Like, we've sort of spent the last 6 months more focused on that than ever before.
And so it's pretty easy to correlate like our position right now with that activity.
What about Leon? You know, we hear from business owners that sound absolutely buried. It's like their voices are just bubbling to the surface as they open an envelope and find another bill. What could they do today to help turn things around?
Yeah, so again, I keep coming back to planning. You know, it's not a very romantic or sexy point of view. It's kind of quite boring, and a lot of people kind of don't look at business planning and strategy as you know, you don't really see that stuff in the movies and the amazing stories about business owners that have turned things around. But the truth is, it's there. You know, it's always there. It's always a really big contributor to success.
It's funny when Andy Mullins rang in before, he said, find yourself a mentor, basically. And I wonder, and even when the Regional Chamber of Commerce said, we've got a lot of new people coming into the industry who may have walked past a venue on a Friday night, saw it really busy and thought, hey, I can do that. And then to discover that it's actually a lot harder than it looks. I mean, is it about sort of really understanding, do you think, just finally, Leon, from the beginning, that you've got to know what you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, that's true in every business, right? Like there's no industry or business where you can just wing it and find success, or at least wing it and find success and then sustain it. So, I think you definitely need to know what you're doing. And if you don't, like, it's rare that people enter into business ventures where they have all the information. You know, usually you have to work out some things as you go. So I think that advice around trying to find a mentor or a really credible source of information and guidance is actually critical right now.
I'll take this stat to both you, Leon, and Danny. One text that just came in saying, is this the crunch that had to happen? Are there too many people trying to operate in this space and not enough customers?
I would say yes, there are, and we've been, you know, we've been warned that this reckoning was coming since well before COVID. You know, every new apartment block has to have a cafe underneath, and, you know, I don't think all of these businesses feel essential. I think the problem is that all of these businesses have people that are running them and working in them. So, you know, it's. I don't think that even perhaps a closure that you might say is necessary is necessarily happy. But it does, perhaps make the playing field a little bit more sustainable for those that are left. I think what I love about what Leon says is that, you know, businesses that have strategy, they have a purpose. And I think as a restaurant critic, I can feel that when I walk into a restaurant, you know, does it know what it's doing? And then I can judge it on its own terms. So I think it is about businesses really, you know, the stronger their identity, their through line, the more resilient they are going to be when these, you know, really large society-wide pressures come to bear.
Leon, thanks so much for your time and your insights. We really appreciate it. Leon Kennedy there from the Mulberry Group. There's so many texts in this. This is from Doris, who's in Berwick, and it says, hey guys, I'm 54. I'm working as a barista, loving my job and lucky to work in an amazing place with fantastic employers, employees and co-workers. I've been there 8 years and not even close to being the longest serving staff member. We find some customers tend to have unrealistic expectations, often about the prices that are brought on by the cost of everything going up. I don't think most people are aware of the tiny profit margins and how hard everyone is working to keep it going. Doris has just...
I want a coffee from Doris.
Yeah, I want
a double espresso from Doris right now.
It's so true. I mean, that's kind of sums it all up, Danny, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I get from that is that these are real people with, you know, amazing backstories working in these businesses, and I just really treasure the interactions that I'm able to have with them. You know, for $4.50 or $5 for a coffee, you can engage with someone in a real way. And, I'm sure Doris turns multiple people's days around by being their barista. So good on you, Doris. Thanks for texting in.
Danny Verlin, as we said, you are the host of Dirty Linen Podcast. You've been having this conversation at length on that podcast. So we say to people, go and listen if this is something that you're passionate about, or maybe you're thinking about starting a small hospitality business yourself. The podcast is called Dirty Linen. Of course, food writer, food critic as well, and a regular here on The Conversation Hour. As always, Danny, thank you.
Pleasure.
That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Take care, and we'll speak to you soon.